This is Bird's Eye View, your sailing podcast. Live, Sail, Die have put together what we hope is going to be the most informative and entertaining sailing podcast you have ever heard. I'm Darcy Watergrave. I'm hosting and trying to keep these two roustabouts calmed down. Joey Allen, Barbara Kendall, two of the biggest names in New Zealand sailing. We'll be broadcasting from the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron's Crow's Nest, one of the iconic rooms in New Zealand sailing. Lock yourself in. This is going to be fun.
Bird's Eye View is sponsored by Andu, New Zealand's home of feel-good living. With free next-day delivery and price match guarantee, feel good about your appliances and furniture with Andu.
Welcome into Bird's Eye View. This is the sailing podcast. My name is Darcy Watergrave. Along with us, I've got Joey Allen and, of course, Barbara Kendall. As we're looking at sailing and all facets of, we're very lucky to be sitting up here in the Crow's Nest. Thank you very much to the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron. What a place this is. And we've got another action-packed show for you coming up. I suppose we better thank Zephyr Coffee as well. And the fine folk downstairs who have been looking after us, the Lighthouse Cafe, and of course the Lighthouse Cafe. They do all sorts of orders, a lot of food, a lot of coffee, and you don't drink coffee, do you, Barbara? So we've got yourself...
the rum and coke.
Hey, hey. Drink it! Drink it! You asked for it.
Ooh, it's the real thing.
you're in the squadron.
I'm feeling like a yaddy now, a yardy. A real yardy.
Stiff conversation, stiff drinks as well. I don't think there's any doubt about that. This is the Bird's Eye View podcast, courtesy of Live, Sail, Die. You want more information about us, about what we're going to do, maybe even throw some questions at us. I'm talking mostly these two as opposed to me. You can livesaildie.com/birdseyeview. Right, today we're going to look at something that's very, very close to your heart. Barbara Kendall, of course, she's got the box set, a gold, a silver and a bronze at the Olympic Games, and we're on the cusp of the Olympic Games. Let's talk about it. I suppose first up, we've got 11 sailors involved going over there. There are a number of classes. We're not in one class, but we are in 9 classes. So just a broad look at who we've got and if you think we're going to do well. What are we looking like here as far as this
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting, actually, to see how our sailors go. Yeah, we're down one class. So the 10th medal is for the mixed 470, which is the two-man the boat, Dennis, which is a very historical boat that's been around since I can remember, since my time in
Do you remember?
Makes me feel old. So the 470's been around for a long time in the games.
Which is unusual, isn't it? Because the classes keep changing all of the time, don't they?
Well, let's just start with, you know, this team. It's we've got a mixture of seasoned Olympians, Joe Alley, Molly Meach. You know, they've been there before, been there, done that. They're probably like the doyens of the our sailors, our team this year, which is great. And then you've got newbies in all the other classes, pretty much, going to the games. So I know it's been a real tough build-up for many of them. You know, a lot of months overseas, but that's just normal. That's what we used to do. And I know that the whole dynamic of sailing professionalism within the Olympic classes has changed a lot from when I... And it was starting to change a lot, but my last games was in 2008 in Beijing. And since then, many nations now are pouring a lot of money into this. And the sailors, you know, they used to have breaks in Europe over winter. And they wouldn't sail, and that's where we used to get our advantage. And now the Europeans are full-time sailing 12 months of the year.
Why is this? Why is everyone climbing into it, do you think?
Just sport. I think sport's becoming more professionalised right across. Governments are realising the value of sport for their people, you know, and what sport can do for a nation as far as feeling proud of their country and the value of sport. And so so the Olympics is, you know, the biggest sporting event, you know, in our calendar, maybe apart from the Soccer World Cup. Way bigger than rugby.
You can't say soccer, it's football.
Oh, how yeah, I know, you? But I'm like an old New Zealand Kiwi girl who played plus soccer at school, so yeah, showing me age. But it's one of those, you know, it's changing and it's evolving. And plus, we got left behind over those years in COVID. So those years in COVID, particularly for sailing, where our sailors couldn't go overseas to Europe for the season, we lost 2-3 years, which was huge.
We'll talk more about that later in the piece. Olympic memories, Olympic aspirations. How many golds have you got?
Zero.
Yeah, okay. You, me too.
No, you talk about the geriatric class of 470. I did a Olympic campaign with Chris Dixon.
Wow.
In 1984. And looking back, it was one of the most special things I've ever done. Mm. So, yeah, I've put my foot in, but Chris Dixon was on fire in those days.
And he was.
Probably the reason he didn't get to those games was probably because he had a shitty forward hand.
he was definitely a trailblazer in his time.
So why didn't you carry on chasing that down? It was just,
well, he did. He did.
No, yourself.
Oh, it wasn't my thing. I was sailing 18-foot skiffs, looking at the 470 fleet and laughing at them. You know, we were lumping big spinnakers down the harbour, and these guys were perfecting their finesse of sailing 470s. But it was a very hurried campaign with Chris, and we ended up in a situation where we had the World Championships in Auckland off Milford, and New Zealand before LA were first, second and third in a World Championship fleet off Milford, and we were right up there. But the selection trials, well, it was a crazy nightmare, and David Barnes and Hamish Wilcox didn't get to go. They were three world championships.
Yeah.
Ourselves and Murray Jones, Glenn Sowry, and Peter Evans ended up going. And it was we had so much talent, such a huge fleet of 470s off Takapuna every weekend.
We've never had that since, have we?
And we've never seen it.
No, never seen it since. And that's a real key too, as well, is the fact that when you have a World Championships in your own country, it grows the class, it grows sailing. So the more sort of big international events that we can get here is going to do nothing but good things.
It's
for
the
sailing.
Same for every sport, though.
Yeah,
it's in your backyard.
Is.
People have
exactly.
interest. I mean, you talked about Football World Cup before. Suddenly
exactly.
having it over here for the women, cricket and the like,
yeah.
as well.
And it just so people, when it's in your face, people go, oh, you know, and it also helps our sailors because it gives all our young generation to aspire to finally compete in a world champs, and it just grows and explodes. So that's, you know, one of, when we look at maybe strategies in the future, it's definitely something that needs to be looked at in that long term.
Right, let's go back to the Olympics, go back to the qualifying, because there's been a few issues around qualifying for all of these boats. Can you explain to us how the qualifying works, the number of regattas that they go through, you've got to hit the various marks, so on and so forth. So we haven't got all of the boats, but most of the boats. Where's been the biggest issue, do you think, in qualifying?
Yeah, I think you've got to, before you sort of look at this particular game, so you've got to look about the evolution of the qualification system of what's been required to be able to get into the Olympic Games. So in the early days, we would have, first of all, you had to qualify the class. So at the Olympic Games, you can only have one per country. Mm. And it's set by World Sailing in cooperation with the International Olympic Committee. How many athletes they're going to have in each class, and that takes into account universality, so ensuring that every continent has sailors from that particular continent to ensure the universality and the solidarity of that sport. So then they work out, you know, whether you're going to have 24 windsurfers, 20 lasers or whatever, depending on that universality. So obviously, well, not obviously, but the laser and the wind surfing in history have been the classes where you get those universality places where sailors like Fiji can compete and they'll get direct entry through their continental championships. Then, so you've got, you know, one per country, and the reason we have one per country is that there was a time, for instance, in windsurfing, French were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the world. And if you get 5 French at the Olympic Games, they're going to match race their one sailor to win the gold medal race. And so that's why you can only have one sailor per country, because of the match racing issue that you will have when you get to the Games. So it's a really unique situation, because you go to a World Championships and there'll be 60 nations, 120 sailors. And it's got to go right down through the funnel, and you get the top sort of 24 nations plus the solidarity entries and one per country. So the Olympics in a way ends up being a little bit easier because you've got less people on the start line than a World Championships. So then Yachting New Zealand goes, okay, well, how are we gonna do our qualifications? And first it was qualifying the country, and then we'll have a trial in New Zealand against our top sailors. But over the years, the amount of sailors that are in the Olympic classes, if you had a trial, you might only have three boats on the start line, you know, particularly in 470, maybe five, maybe 10. I think the most in the windsurfers that we had in our start line was 20. And as far as females go, there was only probably two or three of us. So it wasn't really like a good indicator of who might have been the best in the world. So then they changed the qualifications. Okay, so now you have to place top 10 nations at a World Championships to qualify to get to the Olympic Games. So that's quite tough.
Well, the other sports are looking at top 16. Yeah. You know, if you think they think you're going to be able to finish in the top 16, that's enough to push you through. But it's top 10.
So when I was competing, it was top 10 nations was a shoo-in to take that spot for the Olympic Games. And then you may get an issue that if there are two of you in the top 10, it would go to the next regatta. So this was in my time up into 2008. So if you were the only one in the top 10 at the World Champs, then you could get through. So it was always been a lot of controversy for Olympic trials right through each edition. You could actually pinpoint when there were those trials. And there's always been, like, for instance, when I broke my wrist right before the Olympic trials in 1992, and the trials were meant to be in February that year, but I was going to be in a cast. Yachting New Zealand then decided to postpone the Olympic trials, which was a huge thing. So they would do it 2 months later because I was the benchmark for New Zealand windsurfing, whereas if they'd held that trials in February, none of the girls were anywhere close to being top in the world, and then we would have sent someone to this. We wouldn't have qualified as the class. So that was actually a big legal matter, and they delayed the trials for me, so I was the benchmark for the other girls in that particular trial. So it's quite a complicated... it's not complicated, but this is how it works. So now... It's a similar thing, and Yachting New Zealand sets their target quite high because they want to send the best to the Olympics, and plus it's really expensive. Mm. You know, they're looking from an expense point of view of who are we going to support, wraparound support around the sailor who's expected to win an Olympic medal, and they want to. And then the theory was, well, we just want to keep it down to the ones who we think they can win, pour resource into them, so we can get medals, so we can get funding for the future editions. And that was the mentality back then.
So in this situation now, though, where unlikely there's a couple of teams, couple of boats that might win, would it not be better to reduce the amount of entries across the classes, maybe five or six, so the more funding and concentration can be put their way, so they have a much better chance of actually winning? Or do you think it's better to spread it a bit, so in 4 years' time, if any of these sailors last, they're in a better position? Because this is...
Well, it's a chicken before the egg type scenario. Do you invest in the people who you think you're going to win, and then there's no money left for development and evolution of classes? Or do you go wide and help with growing the classes and developing them and have an 8-year, 12-year, 16-year plan, or whatever it might be? It's too long. But, you know, not for me it wasn't. But just, you know, like, what do you do? And I think no matter what decision you make, it's going to create controversy, and someone's going to be upset because there's money involved, you know, and not many people have much money. You know, some people have, you know, other funds coming in, but most of them rely on high-performance sport for some sort of money. And it's not... The money that comes into Yachting New Zealand mostly is from high-performance sport. They're like the caretakers of the money. And they tell high performance sport how they're going to spend the money. The New Zealand Olympic Committee's got nothing to do with this at this stage. New Zealand Olympic Committee's only job is to look after the team when they're in Paris. They're not responsible for any high performance stuff whatsoever. So it's high performance sport, a relationship between high performance sport and Yachting New Zealand. And they work together to figure out how they're going to spend the money, but Yachting New Zealand comes up with a plan.
as far as futures are concerned, I know you're really hot on this, Joey Allen, when it looks at actual proper sailing as opposed to newfangled winds and wings and windsurfers and the like as well. How important is this for the future of sailors to actually be engaged and be nominated and qualify earlier on the piece, as opposed to just look at, as I was suggesting before, maybe just looking at the absolute cream in the top tier?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I look at it differently to Barbara, where the Olympic yachtsman, a stereotypical Olympic yachtsman, has had a huge part in what I've done, America's Cups, and they've led the field. But we need them. I'll give you a good example. When Peter Burling, I don't know if you heard of, Peter Burling?
Some Chook, yeah, I think they did all right.
They won a medal, an Olympic gold medal, and then immediately jumped onto Whitbread Volvo programs. And I think that shocked a lot of the older boys, where how insane is that, that they jumped back into that offshore world, the most uncomfortable place to be, and did two laps of the planet with the Olympic gold medals getting caught in the grinder pedestal. It's pretty cool.
It is cool.
And I look at those boys now, they are flying our flag incredibly high, you know, and they've got the gold medal, they've done a lap of the planet, and I just want to make sure we don't forget that part of our yachting. You know, we're not doing those round the world races in the numbers we were in the past, and it worries the heck out of me.
There's a lot less opportunities for
in all aspects
of that type, yeah, of stuff, where you don't have to just be Olympic sailor. The other opportunities that are available for sailors, that were, well, only one person, you know, one sailor, one boat. We only get 9 medals, so that's, you know, our fleet is very small, and they get the opportunity to go to the games. The rest of them, what else can they do?
We'll look to the pathways. What's next after the Olympics shortly, yeah, but let's go back to the qualifications.
Oh, yes, yes. Considering my story on the qualifications, it takes a long time.
I'm interested in the controversy around the qualification, because there's always going to be the case. And we've got a couple of the old school ladies who, and I'm talking about Joe and Molly, obviously, and we're joined by Barbara Kendall, by the way, and Joey Allen, and I'm Darcy Waldegrave. And, of course, the young foiler as well, Lucas Walton Keim. I better get my pronunciation right. Yeah. So Lucas actually went into some form of mediation, for want of a better phrase, to actually get put up and win his place. And with the two females, well, is the justification for being there, is it based on what you were saying before around potential and what they've done? Because that's really what it came down to, wasn't it?
Yeah, that is exactly right. I mean, when you look at the sailing pedigree of Molly Meach and Joe Alley, it's pretty exemplary, you know?
You should talk about that.
Because, you know, Molly Meach, you know, won a silver in the 49. She's FX, so she's been there. I gave her medal in Rio. Oh. So, yeah, you know, which was very, very cool.
And
so
Joe's been to how many Olympics?
And Joe, you know, yeah, she's won a gold and a silver in the 470. Yeah. So they're no slugs. They know what they're doing. But I think the transition for them, they thought it probably, you know, I'm just, in my opinion, maybe it was a lot more difficult than they thought to work together as a team, because it's a very, you have to be so in tune, it's like a dance, you know.
Can
it's
you
like
imagine changing from a 470 yeah. helm to a 49er helm?
And Jo's very athletic, you know, she's, I mean, we know how good she is on a wing, and that's what she was doing. And she even tried wind foiling, because after she was a coach, so she's a coach in Tokyo, so she's been in and around it. She's no slug, amazing potential. But what's happened is the rest of the world has got really good. There's a lot of amazing.
So regardless of how good she is, it's so late in the piece for her to catch up. So it's a real pun.
It is, and so they, you know, Yachting New Zealand's put their faith on them on the line, and do they have a chance to win a medal? They're an outside chance, because really, if you know, just from experience and from what I've seen in 5 Olympic Games and 6 Olympic Games, I was at a coach in 2012 in London, you have to have your sailor placing at least the top 5 in most events leading up to the Olympic Games to say, yep, pretty high probability of winning a medal. if they're outside the top five, you have to have a bit of a lucky star and a good regatta and hope that everyone around you else freaks out and loses, you know, type thing. But the sailors are so well drilled and so trained, and they've had such intense competition in Europe constantly. It's quite hard now for that to happen.
It's a Bradby situation. Everyone falls over and someone ends up winning. This is part of Live, Sail, Die. It's a podcast, and this is the Bird's Eye View. I'm Darcy Waldegrave, Barbara Kendall, and Joey Allen. Joey, when you're giving to older sailors an opportunity, in the case of Molly and Joe, that's at the expense of younger sailors coming through, isn't it? How comfortable are you with that? Basically on the roll of a dice that they might actually get something. They've been there, done that. They understand the experience and the pressure of Olympics, but at the cost of a younger group of sailors, is good, bad, and different?
Well, this is the problem without having fleets here. You know, those girls, they deserve to be where they are, 1,000%. You know, they've been leading it, but the problem we got is, going back to there's zero fleets. The fleets are so small, and you just wonder,
where does that come from?
Money.
Yeah, and like, you know, and I think the FXS is quite a tricky boat to sail. So if you look at pathways, you've got to wind it right back and look at the pathways. The pathways to an FX is a 29er. And so you've got to have girls that are in the 29er stepping up into FX. And we've had a few of the girls do this, and they've tried, and over the last, until this last year when the funding was cut, and there was no help for them anymore, they've all gone. They've all disappeared. So we had a fleet of three boats in the FX. So that's six girls sailing FX, which isn't a lot. And then you get to the pointy end of stick, the funding gets cut. And so then Molly and Joe are sailing now for two years without any other female New Zealanders really doing it. And so when they retire at the end of this, which is quite likely, because they're getting to the upper end of what is going to be super competitive in an athletic boat, you know, and they may keep going. I was 41 when I retired, so it's still there's a possibility. Never say never. Never say die. Anyway, those younger kids, these younger girls to come through and get to world class, they're going to have to live in Europe, you know, to get really good, or we're going to have some sort of serious funding. So we could have no FX sailors, really, that are making the New Zealand qualifications.
Do you think it's fair that Molly and Joe get the nod to go over there at the expense of more money or another boat?
Well,
or
they're looking at medal yeah. chance, because then you've got to say, if you don't get medals, then we don't get funding by High Performance Sport New Zealand, and then what do we do for LA for the next 4 years, for the next cycle sort of thing? So as far as that, and then so with Lucas, the kite foiling, and Justina Sellers, actually Kitchens,
your
that
kitchen
was her old name.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I know, Justina used to win foil. They are an evolving, developing class. It's a new class, it's in the Olympic Games.
And so it's a popular class that people want to be involved, engaged in.
Yeah, not so much. Well, foiling's different to kite surfing. So the foiling is really high performance, and they're racing around a course. And so it's a really tricky sport, because you need to have a coach boat on the water with you, because if you're out blasting around Rangitoto and your kite falls out of the sky, those boards don't float. So they can't get back, they have to get rescued. So as far as getting these kids into the class, it's really tricky as far as the kite foiling goes. And so Lucas and Justine have done an incredible job of getting to the top in the world, top 20 in the world, I think they placed at the World Champs, with virtually zero support, because they weren't an identified class, they're a developing class, and they've done it themselves, the two of them, and they've been living in Europe, and Justine's got two kids. You can't even imagine what that's like, going back and forth from Europe, juggling two kids. Her husband's an angel. I know that because I've had to do the same thing. And she's so close with zero support. It's incredible. So they absolutely deserve, because if kite foiling is in LA, we need their knowledge to transfer to the younger generations that's coming through.
Lucas had to fight the power.
Yeah, and he had to take a hit.
Justified?
Justified. Absolutely justified. And the fact that he's you know, he's not going to medal, but what that does, what that message that it sends out to other kids that are coming through these classes, it says there's an opportunity. Like, for instance, what happened with Gretel Pickleton in the Ilka. You know, she was in the 50s at World Champs, 60s in the World Champs, and she's been juggling to get an architectural degree at the same time, trying to sail and get good enough to get to this Olympic Games. And she's young. She's young. She's got, you know, she's a definite talent for LA, definite talent for Brisbane. And she got selected, which was a fantastic outcome. And what that does now too is that we haven't had a female laser for, I don't know how, Ilka, for however long now, which is since 2012. And it should be like, we should have girls lining up. We should have huge fleets. Why isn't there? You know, that's a question for Yachting New Zealand and the clubs and the class. And finally, and if they now they're sending Greta, that sends a message to, we will send you if you have potential. And it just opens up the world of yachting instead of cutting them off at the knees and saying you can't go, which has happened in 2012, 2016, 2021. And it sends the message to say, come on, guys. But setting a standard that they've got and programs in place and support that they can get there. So they did that with the windfoiling. You know, we've got Josh Armit. He's done really, really well. And the program that John Paul Tobin put together, the plan, it was a long-term plan. And Paris was just the stepping stone, with eyes on LA and Brisbane and building up the class. But the sailors are talented. You know, Josh and Veal are really talented. They had incredible coaching and guidance by John Paul to get them to the top 10 in the world for the few events in 22. And now, you know, but it's tricky. But they're an outside chance. If the stars align and they're in the zone, which we can talk about in another podcast, if they're in the zone and the stars align, which we've seen before, I've had sailors beat me at Olympic Games that have never, ever beaten me in a regatta before. Right. So it happens. They could be an outside chance, which is amazing.
The two Macs competing in a boat that's got a storied history, don't think there's any doubt about that. Where do you think...
The two Macs.
Can I call them the Mac brothers? They're not brothers.
Oh, the Mac... our 49ers sailors. They've got the mix.
Mix or Max? Max. Isaac and Will.
Yeah, they're going to go. They could surprise us.
Yeah,
they actually, could. I don't know them personally, but
McCarty and McKenzie. Yeah, okay, I was being a bit tricky on that.
I think they could. They could surprise a lot of people, actually.
Yeah, they're definitely a. Yeah. They were getting really pushed hard by Logan Beck and Hamish,
which is a shocking. That was a sad story.
Oscar, yeah.
For Logan, but I'd watch those two boys. They excite me.
And you know what? They've been pushing really, really hard, and they've been consistent. So if they get into the zone and then they don't get wrapped up in the Olympic, you know, seduced by the Olympics,
Think they'll handle pressure very well. Those two.
So that they're definitely an outside chance. And then we've got Tom Saunders, who's a veteran. He won the World Champs in 2021. So he's tapping on the door, and he's always, you know, our laser sailors have always been strong in the past. Whether he can get into the zone again, because there's a special place called the zone, and not also get wrapped up in the rings, because he's finally made it.
I like the way you say it, wrapped up in the rings. Is that Olympic fever, is it?
Well, no, that's when people get seduced by the rings and they sort of forget why they're there and sort of go, oh my God, it's the Olympics, you know.
They just want the tattoo, right?
Yeah. I haven't got one.
Is Tom Saunders one of our best prospects, do you think?
I think, well, he's definitely had the best consistent results over the last quadrennial. If we look at the last 4 years, he's been definitely one of our best performers consistently, and it's consistency that you can put your money on.
Josh Armit.
Windfoiling.
Yeah.
He's been consistent in the last little bit, just below. He's that sort of 5 to 10. He's got a couple of fourths.
You tell his old man. go. You tell his old man he's below. You know, that boy could surprise us.
I mean, he's won a Laser Worlds. He knows how to, you know, Youth Worlds. But youth, just FYI, it's a different dynamic from Youth Worlds.
Yeah.
To when you get to the big boy stuff, you know.
What's the difference for the uninitiated?
Age, experience.
Yep.
You got to learn how to lose, so you can win. And some of those youth have come through, and they've just won, and then they get to the big boys place, and you've got to learn how to.
I'm a massive fan of rugby league and rugby union. Rugby league, these big boys running at the junior level, and suddenly they go up to the NRL top level, and they're suddenly competing against men.
Question.
And the story's very, very different.
What's it like in the Olympic boat park for these young guys?
Well, very exciting. When you go into the Olympic boat park, and, you know, because they've done a few events where it's all the Olympic classes, but it's not like when you go into Olympic boat park, because there's security. You have to go through. When you walk through, there's security. So every bag you have to have go through the security. Everyone has accreditations. You get into the Olympic Boat Park. Everyone's in their country spaces. They have their containers. It can be quite an environment that you've never been in before. You can't even replicate it. That's the first thing. And there's a lot of the tension increases. Like all these people that have been your mate from other countries, your family, because you've been training with them, sailing with them, partying with them, traveling with them, staying in their houses. All of a sudden, the wall comes down and you don't actually hang with them much anymore because everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is the Olympics. And so all that fun that you used to have disappears. You know, it's gone and it's all serious and there's usually, you know, like hush hush and you don't, it's isolated and it's really weird. It's different to how it was. And people just think sit in their country blobs, country groups when they go to the dining room. Everyone's staying in the same village, in the same accommodation and eating in the same halls. And there's not a lot of banter, actually, to be honest, in when you get, because it's serious, this is it, you know.
Doesn't sound that much fun, does it?
No, but that's when the management, it's the responsibility of the management to actually go make a joke out of it. And that was, you know, Michael Clark,
I was going to say.
For a good time, not a long time. This was before the security was, like, insane. But he was able to smuggle a couple of pallets of alcohol, beer,
into the Olympic pallet?
Into the Olympic Marina Park in Barcelona.
Now you're talking
my
language.
And held parties in our container. But,
bring back alcohol.
So it's the professionalism that's come into sailing. They're big athletes. Oh, yeah, hold on, let me just...
Yeah, they're bringing alcohol back into it. Hey, what about the NACRA 17, America Dawson, Mika Wilkinson? Is that an opportunity, a good chance?
Yes, they're another one that's been sitting sort of around that fifth, sixth area.
Because they've experienced, though.
Very experienced, yeah. That's their second Olympics. Yeah. I forgot them, actually. If it's lighter ones,
that's
I reckon they're in with a grin. They're in with a grin, I reckon, because if it's lighter ones. But if we get the Mistral in Marseille, which is the stronger winds and the big waves, they're quite a lighter crew.
They'll handle pressure well, those two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'll handle it. Tough as nails. It's more their...
And a cycle into it, yeah.
Yeah, if they get the lighter winds in Marseille, then they'll be exciting to watch, definitely.
Interestingly enough, sailors are sailors, but sailors suddenly become athletes when it becomes Olympic time. Does that transition happen? How much does that change what they do? If indeed does it, I don't know.
No, it does. The evolution of sailors has changed a lot. I think probably with the windsurfing coming in and when they opened it up to pumping for us in 1996, our sport changed overnight because you had to have a fitness of an Olympic class rower. You know, with pumping, it was like being on a, how I explain it, it's like being on a rowing machine, going as hard as you can while you're playing chess.
And I hate to say it, but the windsurfing Beijing with the pumping was possibly the boringest sailing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it was just
no
like,
wind.
What is this?
I know, but then did you see the 470 pumping and how weird they look? Because the 470 said, well, let's join on the bandwagon and try and make the 470 exciting. And here you have this guy or girl on a trapeze pumping with their hips, lying horizontal, and I'm just going,
this is not sailing.
I'm feeling really uncomfortable watching this. Very uncomfortable. But anyway, but they're pumping, you know, and now all our sailors are, you know, gymming, nutrition and protein, recovery, wrapped around sports science.
Because they have to.
They have to.
If
you want to win. Absolutely.
World, yeah.
And so you don't, you know, used to, at the end of a, you know, regatta, end of a day's training, there was beers and pizzas and away you went. That doesn't happen anymore.
How much psychology?
You'd be pining back for that, wouldn't you?
Sorry?
You were always talking about bring back the beers.
Bring
it wasn't like
booze.
In your day, was it?
Yeah,
it was
no,
all about the fun.
It's been a massive part of my yachting career, but that's probably why I don't have too many medals.
Yep, sorry, carry on. What did you start before I rudely interrupted you?
So what about the psychology? How much of that are they tapping into these days?
So that's really interesting. So when I look at what happened to me in 96, you know, because I was the first ever flag bearer for New Zealand and team captain, and I was 28, I think, at the time, and a young 28, because we didn't have social media, and Olympic defending champion. So when you go into something like that with that amount of pressure, it's a very different circumstance to a normal stuff. And the thing is, we didn't have psychologists because it was deemed if you talked to a psychologist, then there was something wrong with you. You know, you're a weirdo. And so that you just grunt in, take a concrete pill and get on with it. What's wrong with you?
It was a weakness, wasn't it?
It was. And now psychologists are absolutely, and it's something that not even psychologists, mind skills people that can actually say, how do we get you into the zone? How do we get you into the flow? And that's been my job, working with some of the teams that I've been working with, and from experience, you know, and you throw in a bit of psychology tools, even though I'm not qualified, you can help people get into the place where they feel they can let go and compete at their best. And interestingly enough, just a small example, that the German surfing team that tried to qualify, has been trying to qualify for the Olympics for Chopu in Tahiti and Paris. Their team consists of their surfers, and when you go to World Surfing Games, there's six in a team, three boys, three girls, or three men, three women. They have a manager, which has to manage their heats. They have a coach, a surfing coach, and their third person is a psychologist. And that psychologist is in their ear, walking with them, talking with them, you know, eating with them, hanging out with them, standing on the wall break for when they come in, when they leave, and just getting them into the space and just talking, because they get to know them really, really well, to help them get into the zone, to take them through their pre-race, their pre-competition routine, and in them, walking with them, working with them all the time. And he's an amazing guy. You have to get the right type of person. Working with them for the last three years, and both Germany, which you wouldn't even think, how did they qualify? Both qualified at the last World Surfing Games to go to Turku.
Let's forget the Germans. Are the Kiwis, has our Kiwi team had a lot of access to that sort of...
They get access once they get to Olympic standard, and I'm hoping, I don't know if the psychology is in the support team that will be going with them. Usually you'll get a doctor and a physio. You may get a sports psych, but that sports psych needs to be working with them for the last 4 years, 8 years to get to work through. I wish that I'd had that. You know, when I was competing, I was really lucky that I had a woman who was incredible, who was my masseuse, mind skills, performance coach in a way. And that's
why Becky
would have successful.
Becky would have been brilliant.
No, Becky needed to see her. Yeah, it's another one.
But is there anyone in that space though here in New Zealand that actually is?
Yeah, we've got some good ones. We've got some good psychologists coming through, but that's really
the evolution. Predominantly in sailing, or is it
no, not specific in sailing, but they've been around for eight. It's just been something that's happened in the last 8 years, and we actually have coming through now. We have Sarah Winter, who is a laser sailor, and she represented New Zealand in 2012 in London, and she's went right. There's a lot more to sailing, and she then couldn't get on the New Zealand team for 2016, so she joined the Irish and she helped their girl win a medal. So it's people like her that we need to be bringing in that sailed, that understands sailing, that has all the letters after her name now, very, very passionate. Those are the ones that if I was putting a high performance program together, I would be bringing into the foray and getting to start with. There are younger sailors coming through now that are on the pathway, particularly for LA and Brisbane, and they have to build relationships because you have to be comfortable.
Okay, name
you work for.
Name your top five mentors.
My top five mentors.
If you were gonna push forward.
Oh, get today or for what I?
No,
what
no,
I
not
used.
You. Not for you. Who you would consider for the next cycle. Name, that's a perfect example, Sarah Winter.
Yeah, so Sarah Winter, I'd be going,
so
okay, come
give
on.
Give us four more.
Okay, I would actually, believe it or not, I'd still have Becky in and around.
No.
Because his experience and his vision for detail, particularly in wind foiling and kite foiling, and his ability to see things from a different side, from a technical side, is off the charts, and his passion and his humour is as far as I see, and the kids still love him. Like he went out sailing with my daughter who's wind foiling, and she just was like, oh my god, Becky's so good, you know, just from this expertise. Definitely have a
no more nicknames. Grant Beck,
yes,
thank you
Becky. Grant Beck.
Three more.
Well, then it's got to be class specific, because you're looking at coaches, sailing coaches that have the expertise in that class. You know, to sail a 49er and an FX, they're very, very similar, is different to a laser or a 470. So we need the best coach. I mean, Hamish Wilcox. I mean, we've lost him. You know, he's taken off and coaching the Spanish in Sail GP. that guy, his knowledge and his ability to work in a team is gold, you know, and he's gone.
Two more.
She's a harsh taskmaster.
No, this is good. This is good.
Yeah, that's just my opinion.
It's a valued opinion.
Then you need someone that's off the charts good at organising and managing. So someone that is into the details and can pull all the threads together really super quick and wheel and deal and hustle. So we need a wheeler, dealer, hustle, high performance manager, someone that can get sponsorship, someone that can, like what Clarkey was like, you know, like a Grant Dalton that's amazing. He can get water, he can get money out of a stone, blood out of a stone, you know, and just squeeze to get the money to support all these, you know, someone that's just incredible at connections and marketing and just that whole thing that can connect all the stuff. And then, yeah.
One more.
Right. But that, okay.
That's hard, but you've done well.
Yeah.
You've done well.
And then I think I should sort of jump in there.
Good on you. Yep.
You know, I'm going to blow my own trumpet. We need more females. Give her a trumpet. More females and bloody... Sorry, I just swore for the third time on this podcast. You need more females. Jan Shearer is insane. What she's doing with New Zealand Water Polo as a CEO and the experience that she's had, someone like that coming in, you know, that female, half the classes are now female. Where are all our female coaches? Where are all our female managers? Where are all our female helping, you know? Mm. How you coach a female is different to how you coach a male. We're wired differently. And so having that, and actually females coaching guys, like, you know, having a female in the boat, but they see things differently, and it really helps with culture. You know, when you get this male dominated culture, having a female influence in there can change it, and sailing is still very, very old boys club.
It's a testosterone, and maybe that's not entirely helpful. You touched on, we've all touched on this before about the future and about what we're looking forward to. Is there a future? What happens post-Olympics? Where are they all going? There's some older athletes who we won't see anymore. There's some younger athletes, but we might not see them either. They could disappear off to somewhere to make some money into different classes. So post-Olympics, what does it look like for New Zealand sailing?
So usually after the Olympics, there's a big review. And I'm hoping that they do, and this will really depend on our results at the Olympics as well, because if we don't do very well, there'll be a big review. If we do kind of well, there'll be a little review. But there needs to be actually how, let's look at this big picture and do some real thought leadership and how we can grow sailing as a sport right across all the classes. And
is this a time to...
It is.
Is this a time to bring this up?
Yeah, I think it is. And this is maybe a really good forum to start the thought leadership on how what we can do for sailing in New Zealand to really invigorate it again, to bring it back, you know?
Yeah.
To really look at what are the pathways.
We need it all, right? We need the Olympics, but we also need the other ingredients that have been...
Absolutely. We need the junior classes, we need the learn to sail, we need the keel boats, we need the offshore boats, we need the... And how do we put it together and bring new blood in and provide pathways? Because as a parent, you look at it and go, well, my kids love sailing. The chances of them going to the Olympic Games are pretty small because only one per country goes. How can we, what else could they do? Can they go in keelboats? Can they go wing foiling? You know, where's the pathways? Where's the, you know, if I look at wing foiling now, for instance, and I was a young sailor coming in, I'd go, I'm going to go wing foiling. They've got a professional circuit. I can actually win prize money. I can get sponsors because it's a new class and it's developing and I'm talented and I can now, you know, earn money from my sponsors. I can earn money from prize money. I'm going to go wing foiling. The Olympic class, it's going to cost me $30,000 or $40,000 for a wing foiler to campaign that a year. I can do winging, get everything paid for and earn prize money. And then what other opportunities are there in other types of sailings? See, in around women's match racing, in and around whatever it may be?
I'll come at it slightly different angle. 1993, 1994, three Whitbread teams out of Auckland Harbour, rigging up, pulling mainsails up right out there, right outside that window. You know, I'd like to see that come back.
Yes.
You know,
this goes into that strategy of like world champion events, yacht racing, where they actually come in and call into Auckland Harbour again or into Wellington Harbour again or whatever it may be, so we can actually get some
It's a crazy bus. Situation where... you know, we had Olympic athletes successfully coming through the Russell Coutts's, mingling with Whitbread sailors, and then they go and can win an America's Cup. They couldn't have done it individually. They needed each other. But now, you don't need that many yachtsmen on an America's Cup yacht.
No.
Is that an issue?
Yes. So the American, I don't, and SailGP. What about SailGP?
SailGP. You
know, same thing. It's very elite.
Yeah.
And you've got all these amazing young sailors that are coming through foilers, like Sean Herbert's of this world. Insane, technical, you know. But for him to break in to the Peter Burling's, Blair Tukes, that little group, it's virtually impossible.
Yeah. Look at the wider. You mentioned all forms of sailing, and that's a great blue sky idea. Let's cover everything off. But who has to drive that, and what does it rely on? Because I see a number of different groups of sailors identifying and driving their own. Is there an archer, an umbrella
collaboration
that has to be done? Yeah, okay, so how does that work?
So a collaboration of thought leadership. You get the stakeholders into a room, and you go, right, what does it look like in 4 years' time? What does it look like in 8 years' time? What does it look like in 12 years' time? Because what happens, I think, when you have an organisation like we have Yachting New Zealand, they get pulled in so many Kalerpa, rules, regulations, risk, which is fine. But then what about this other arm of, like, growth and development and pathways? So that's maybe what we've got to look at. And I don't know, I'm just throwing ideas out there, but it feels like there's time.
Are you... I'll put my doom and gloom hat on. I'm worried about the next 10 years of our sport. You know, this country has produced amazing successes.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit...
So let's throw it out there.
A little bit worried.
Throw it out there, Darcy.
I could argue that sailing is a national sport right up with rugby, with the success across the number of different platforms that this country has had. Look, one last thing, because we're running out of time, because you guys talk too much.
This was my Olympic. This was probably my genre.
We can do another podcast all about it. Come the time itself. Is there the want within the wider community to actually generate this wider thinking process? Just quickly, do you think it's
out there? Absolutely. Everyone I've talked to around the boat parks, it's just like, come on, let's pull our act together, you know. But it needs someone to lead it and ringlead it, and a bit of support. And
Barbara,
behind it.
I'm going to throw you under the bus. Do we realistically have a chance of meddling at these games?
Outside chance of winning, at the most, probably a couple.
Medalists. Any position on the, it doesn't matter.
I just say medals now, because if you win a gold, a silver, or a bronze, it's friggin' amazing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And that was one of the pits that I fell into. When I won the silver, I was made to feel like I'd lost the gold. But if you win a gold, silver, and a bronze, it's off the charts awesome. All hail them.
And that's it. We've got to tie it up, put a bow on it, whatever you want to do, you stick a fork in it, it's done.
Shoot it.
Yeah, they will be shooting us after
this. Okay, fine. Shoot things. My name's Darcy Waldegrave, Barbara Gandle, Joey Allen. This is the Bird's Eye View podcast. Live, sail, die. 100% behind this. It's their fault. LiveSailDie.com if you want to be involved, /Bird's Eye View. And obviously a huge, huge round of applause for the Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron, who have actually led us into this incredible crow's nest room, where we're going to carry on, all things going well and good, bringing you all the chat we can, plus guests, and these two and me here from now to the end of time. We will see. Thank you, Barbara, for coming in and giving us your time. Thank you very much, Joey, as well. And I hope you enjoyed your drink, although I do notice that it's still there. Till next time, you look after yourself, huh?